Ezra chapter 4. We're going to be looking at the entire chapter tonight. I don't think I'll read the whole chapter, but we're going to be studying the content of it. Ezra chapter 4. I've entitled the message tonight, Tricks of the Enemy. Tricks of the Enemy. In 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 14, the Apostle Paul says that the devil has the ability to transform himself into an angel of light. He poses as something that is good, but yet he is extremely evil. And as you think about the devil, the Bible describes him in many different ways. It calls him the accuser of the brethren in Revelation chapter 12. It calls him a deceiver. It calls him the father of lies in John chapter 8. It calls him the roaring lion in 1 Peter 5. And tonight we're going to see how that he is his evil. In his evil, he tricks God's people and uses his evil tricks against God's people to try to get them to do wrong. And so we're going to focus our thoughts on that tonight as we look at this chapter of Ezra chapter 4. And tonight I want us to notice three tricks that the devil uses to attack God's people and as they rebuild the temple, and he will use the same tricks to attack us. And so we need to be wary of these things. All right, number one, I want us to notice that the first way that he attacks is through infiltration. Through infiltration. Kind of a big word, but to infiltrate. What's an infiltrate? All right, a person who infiltrates is a spy. Someone that comes and sneaks in, and he pretends he's a friend, acts like he's your buddy, and he works with you, but he's actually a spy. He's gaining information so he can take it back to someone else. And he's infiltrating. And that's exactly what was happening here among the people. In chapter 4, verse number 1, it says, "Now the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin..." Who is Judah and Benjamin? Who's that referring to?
The country.
Okay, it's referring to the nation of Judah, the two tribes, Judah and Benjamin. And so it says, "And now the adversaries..." adversary is a big word that means the enemies. "The adversaries of Judah and Benjamin heard that the people of the captivity builded the temple unto the Lord God of Israel. Then they came to Zerubbabel." Who was Zerubbabel? Remember, he was the leader. He was the building leader, the supervisor of the project. "They came to Zerubbabel and to the chief of the fathers and said unto them, 'Let us build with you, for we seek your God, as ye do. And we do sacrifice unto him since the days of Esarhaddon, the king of Asher or Assyria, which brought us up hither.'" All right, now let's just review a second. Remember, in our study of the Old Testament, we learned that the people of Israel, when the nation of Israel went into captivity, the northern tribes. There's 10 northern tribes and 2 southern tribes. The 10 northern tribes went into captivity into Assyria, and they never came back. All right, so they went up into Assyria. And so Asher or Assyria, that's what it's talking about. So it's talking about them when they went into captivity into Assyria. Now, the southern tribes of Benjamin and Judah, they went into captivity as well, but they went over to Babylon. They were there for 70 years, and they came back after 70 years. All right, now, as we think on that, he says here that the people that these people that were talking to him, they came to see Zerubbabel and says, "We want to help you. We've been worshiping your God since the days that King Esarhaddon brought us here from Assyria." I know what happened. When they took them captive, always what they would do is they wouldn't leave the land empty. You leave the land empty and it gets overrun by wild animals and it becomes a wasteland. All right, so you don't do that. So what he did is he captured the people, took them out, and then he brought other people back in. He sent other people from other captured lands. So if he captured people from Turkey and other places, he'd bring those people in and put them in their place so that the land wasn't empty, so that it didn't turn into a wasteland, and it wasn't overrun by wild animals. So these pagans that came in from all these other places that didn't know anything about God, he says, "We've been serving your God since the days Esarhaddon brought us back from Assyria." So these people were claiming that they believed in the same God as the people of Judah, and they wanted to help them build the temple. But They were infiltrating. They were enemies. They were not the friends. They were adversaries. The scriptures call them adversaries in the very first line. Now, when the adversaries of Judah and Benjamin, these were the enemies. They were people that were trying to discourage, trying to hinder, trying to stop them from their work. And they claimed to be their friends. They posed as friends, and they seemed like harmless neighbors, but they were the Samaritans. Now, remember the Samaritans. The Samaritans were people that were married to the Jewish people. So they were the pagans that came in out of these other lands. They married Jewish people. And so there's a half-breed group of people there. They're part Jew, part pagan. And they brought their own false gods and religions with them. And they've added to that Judaism. So they have a little bit of worship of God, but a bunch of other pagan religions as well. So they've got this blend of Judaism and paganism into their new hybrid of religion. And so this is what they believed. And they come to Zerubbabel and say, we want to help you build the temple because we believe in your God like you do. We've been worshiping God ever since we came down to this place. Now, how should they respond? What should they do in a situation like that? They claimed to be helper. They claimed to be their friends. Well, preventing this infiltration took wisdom and boldness. And the leaders of Israel, of Judah here, were very wise. God gave them special wisdom. And verse number 3, but Zerubbabel and Jeshua and the rest of the chief of the fathers of Israel said unto them, ye have nothing to do with us to build the house of our God, but we ourselves together will build unto the Lord God of Israel, as King Cyrus, the king of Persia, hath commanded us. Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building. All right, now look at there. They immediately show the real colors. Zerubbabel and the other wise men of Israel say, hang on now, we know you guys really don't believe like we do. You believe a little bit like we do, but you also got all kinds of pagan ideas. You've blended Judaism and paganism into some new hybrid of religion that isn't really the truth. You know, that's a reminder to us that you cannot add anything to Christianity. That's why when someone tries to add something to Christ and say, I'm saved by faith in Christ, but also by my church, they're not saved. That's a hybrid. It's a false religion. It's a false teaching. It's Christ only, nothing added, nothing taken away from it. And so it was in that day that you couldn't add something to their biblical beliefs and have it come out pure. And so Zerubbabel and the other leaders said, no, wait, we don't want your help. We're going to do it ourselves. We were sent here by Cyrus, the king of Persia, to rebuild the temple, and we're going to do it ourselves. We don't need your help. So immediately then, they turn against him. The infiltration there here is very dangerous. And you know, we face the same kind of pressures today, same kind of infiltration today, things that, you know, that you may face in your own family among unsaved relatives or colleagues at work, where people, they're trying to get you to change. They don't like the way you are. And they don't like the things that you do, and they don't like you being different than them. And they may try to get you to change, or they may try to challenge your biblical stand on things. Another thing that is very dangerous in this area as well is unsuitable friends. You know, there's three basic kinds of unsuitable friends. All right, take note of this. This is very important. Three kinds of unsuitable friends. Number one is unsaved friends. They're not suitable for close friends because the worldly unsaved friends will pull you down. They'll pull you down. The second kind of unsuitable friends, perhaps even more dangerous than the first, are weak Christians. You get a friend that is a weak Christian, they're not going to like you taking a stand. They're not going to like you standing up for what is right. They're going to say, oh, come on, lighten up a little bit. You know, not everybody does it your way, and there's nothing wrong with my way, and let's just lighten up a little bit. So there's the weak Christians. And so you need to be very careful in your choice. You young people especially need to be careful about this in choosing your friends, because many times young people can't see what mom and dad can see. They can't see the danger of this friend. They don't see that this friend is, you know, got a bad background, it comes from a bad family, or this guy, they got these problems, and they don't always talk right, they don't always do it. And as a young person, you may not see that, but if mom and dad say, hey, hang on, that person's not a good friend for you, you need to listen, because mom and dad can see things you can't see. Very important. The third kind of dangerous or unsuitable friend is a doctrinally erring friend, a friend that doesn't really hold to the true doctrines of the Bible. And they're going to work on trying to change you and get you to doubt what you believe. That's very dangerous as well. So there's three real dangerous kinds of friends. And these people here, they claim to be believers, but they also had their mixture of Judaism and paganism blended together, and they weren't genuine believers. They weren't genuinely following God. Now, the Bible warns us of friends like that. Several different verses that talk about friends that are very good verses for you to make note of and even memorize. Proverbs 13, verse 20 says, "He that walketh with wise men shall be wise, but a companion of fools shall be destroyed." If you walk with wise men, you're going to get wise. You walk with fools, you're going to be destroyed. Proverbs 13, verse 20. Proverbs 14, verse 7, go from the presence of a foolish man when thou perceivest not in him the lips of knowledge. When you meet someone, you can see that, you know, they're not really giving me good advice. They're saying things that are questioning me. They're making me doubt the Bible. They're making me question the things that I believe. God says, go from the presence of a foolish man like that. Don't stick around with them. They're going to lead you in the wrong way. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 6. Proverbs 27, 6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. What's that mean? So it means your friend, if you've got a genuine friend that is really a good friend and an honest friend, he will wound you when you do wrong. He'll say, hang on, you can't do that. That's not right. But the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. The enemy is the guy who comes to you and says, oh, hi, it's good to see you. It's good to have you back again. I like you. You're a great guy. But they're just lying to you because they're just a shallow friend. They're a cheap friend. They're a friend that's going to lead you astray. And so he says the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. Romans chapter 16, verse 17. Romans 16, 17 says, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which you have learned, and avoid them. When there's someone that believes doctrine that is contrary to the true biblical doctrine, we need to avoid them. You know, people say, oh, come on, you're too narrow. Don't be so narrow-minded. Well, God says we need to be narrow when it comes to doctrine because it'll lead us astray. It'll lead us in the wrong way. So be careful about that, friends that have other kinds of doctrine. Another one is 1 Corinthians 15:33. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Word communications there means to evil companions will corrupt your way of life. Be careful if you choose the wrong friends. A man named Stan Evans made this statement regarding this passage. He says the Christian is not to be discourteous or detached from unbelievers. Rather, he is to befriend them and gain an opening to present the gospel. But he ought never to keep company. He ought never to keep their friendship by compromising his convictions. We should never keep a friendship by compromising our convictions. If you have a conviction that something is right, this is the way it ought to be, this is what God said, don't try to keep a friendship by changing what you believe. Don't do that. Stand for truth. So, the principle we can gain from this section here is to be wise, don't compromise. Be wise, don't compromise. So the first thing they did is they attacked through infiltration. Secondly, the enemy attacked through irritation. They attacked through irritation. Verses 4 and 5, we see here that the people of the land weakened their hands of the people and troubled them in building. And they hired counselors against them. So they irritated them. You know, we've all been in situations where maybe you're out working in the garden in the spring of the year, and it's about that time of year it's going to start happening, and you're trying to work in the garden, and flies are everywhere, just driving you nuts. You can't even breathe without them going down your throat. They're all over the place, just irritating flies. Or maybe there's a situation when you've been camping, and you're sleeping in the tent, and you're almost asleep, and you're, not him again. And you swat at him, and you think you got him, you almost like, all right? Irritating, those mosquitoes. And then there's the times when we go on a picnic, and, you know, you're trying to eat your food, and the wind is blowing, and there's junk flying, there's dirt all over the place, and you get dust in your eyes, and you get irritating. So all these are things that are irritating to us. But, you know, these people that said that they were friends, now they become irritants. Now they start troubling the people. They start giving them a hard time. These Samaritans were weakening their hands and troubling them. They discouraged the people. Perhaps they were saying things like, oh, you know, you can't do this job. It's too hard for you. You're not able to do that. You're too few people. I don't know what all they might have said, but they were discouraging the people. They were troubling them, giving them a hard time. They troubled the people with their constant irritations and interruptions. They'd be coming and trying to stop their work and say, hey, let's have a talk. We need to talk about something. And they'd stop their work, irritating them, troubling them in these ways. Perhaps they even stole supplies at night. You know, nothing more irritating than when you're trying to work and you, where'd that tool go? Oh, you know, somebody must have taken it. And, you know, who knows what all might have done, but they were working to irritate them. And then it says that the Samaritans, they hired counselors against them. And the word against there literally means to divide. It means they hired counselors to divide them, to cause them to have conflicts and not to be unified. We need unity in order to work well. We talked about that a week or so ago, about the unity they had. And they were trying to divide the people. Perhaps they were giving them bad advice. Maybe they were encouraging rebellion. You know, nothing worse than that. And coming along, somebody says, you know, that Zerubbabel guy, you know, he's not what you think he is. You know, he's a real troublemaker. You know, he's kind of bossy. You shouldn't listen to him, you know. You know, come on, just stand up for your rights, you know. And these kind of things, just try to get them to irritate. I don't know what all they did, but they were hiring counselors to go in there and irritate the people. And it also appears, this is probably the biggest thing that they did, it appears that they were hiring people to go back to Babylon and lobby against them in the palace of Cyrus and then Darius, to lobby against the people and say bad things about them and to tell the king bad news about them and try to irritate them through irritating the king at them. And this built up into a crescendo until it did cause them problems. Now, the devil uses irritations to hinder God's work today as well. There's all kinds of things that he'll use to irritate. He irritates and weakens our hands by people that mock us. You know, there's many times, and we've probably all faced this, when, you know, you're wanting to be a testimony for the Lord, and then somebody says something that mocks you or says something that is in a way to put you down, and you kind of clam up and be quiet and don't say any more for the Lord. God doesn't want that. He's just an irritation to try to hinder us. Or maybe they hinder us. This is what common thing when we're out knocking on doors. You know, I don't know, I couldn't even count the times. You knock on the door and you're talking to a person, you're just going through the gospel and the phone rings. You know, so they have to go answer the phone. 9 chances out of 10, that's the end of the conversation because the phone rang. But you know, sometimes it'll happen to Christians. I've known Christians where, you know, somebody shows up on their doorstep Sunday morning just as they're getting ready to go to church. And a strong Christian will say, hey, listen, we're on our way to church. You're welcome to come on with us. A weaker Christian will say, well, I guess I can't go to church today. My friends just showed up. All right, you got to decide what you're going to do before that happens so that there's no question. I'm thankful I grew up in a home where if that I can't ever remember here having that happen because we lived out in the country. But if it ever did, I know what Dad would do. He'd say, well, we're on our way to church. You're welcome to come with us. Hop in. He wouldn't stay home, not a moment. I mean, that was our plan. We're going to church. Doesn't matter what you do. If you don't want to come to church with us, well, we'll be back at 12 o'clock. You can come back home when we get back. I mean, that's just the way it was. Why? Because it was settled in his mind before it happened. And we need to be settled in these things because there's going to be irritations that'll hinder us, try to keep us from doing right. It may be sports. It may be a family barbecue plans. It may be a party somebody plans on Sunday. And you just need to say, hey, hang on. No, I go to church on Sunday. All right? And Sunday's my day for the Lord. Do it on Monday or Friday or Saturday, whatever, but not Sunday. No, we're not going to do that. We know what we're going to do, and we've got it made up beforehand. And so we need to make sure we know what we stand for because there's going to be irritations. The devil delights in doing that. And the counselors the devil hires to divide us, you know, maybe gossip. People are saying bad things about us or threats or words of discouragement or discord and conflicts and people arguing, fighting or disagreeing with each other. All these things the devil uses and he fuels them to try to get irritations to keep us from doing God's work. And so what do we do when we face these things? Well, we need to overcome them by persevering. Just do what's right. I like what an old preacher said years ago. He says, let's do right till the stars fall. do right till the stars fall. And that really needs to be our theme when these kind of things come up. We need to say, hang on, I'm going to do right till the stars fall. I'm just going to do right. And, you know, you do what you want, but that's what I'm going to do. It's kind of like what Joshua said in Joshua 24:15. He said to the people, he said, choose you this day whom you will serve. But as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. We're going to serve the Lord. He said, I've made my choice. And that's what we need to do. We need to make a choice and say, this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to stand on it. So we will be attacked through irritation. But when that happens, if we've already made up our mind, we're going to stand strong, we're not going to budge, then we'll be able to stand through it. And that's exactly what the people here did. Zerubbabel and the other leaders, they said, nope, we're not budging, we're not changing. You can irritate us all you want, but we're not going to change our ways. We're going to build this temple for the Lord. Then we find the third trick of the devil that he used against them. He attacked them, first of all, he attacked them through infiltration. Secondly, he attacked them through irritation. And thirdly, he attacked them through fabrication or lies. He attacked them through fabrication or lies. The enemy attacked them through telling lies about them. They not only hired counselors against them to go lie to Cyrus and Darius about the people, but he goes on to tell about this. Now, this is a very interesting thing, something I learned, and you'll want to put a note in the margin of your Bible here so that you can pay close attention to this. Verse 6 on down through verse 23, verse 6 to 23 is an illustration. Verse 6 to 23 is an illustration. And what he's doing is he is giving us information about what is taking place. Now, let me do something for you. I made myself a little chart, and you won't be able to see it from way back there, a little chart of the events that took place here. And I'm going to put it on the board up here so you can see that. If you want to get the chart, you can go on our website and look on the sermon, and I've got the chart there, and you can click on the chart, and you probably could save it that way. But in this chart here, what we've got is we've got a timeline that goes across, and the different kings. You had Cyrus the king, and then there was his son only reigned for a short little time. His name is Cambyses. I'm just calling Cam for now. And then there was Darius. And then there was Xerxes. And then there was Artaxerxes. We'll just call him Art. All right, now it was during Xerxes' time. That was Esther's time. All right, that was Ahasuerus. All right, so there's Darius, Xerxes. But now, so Zerubbabel came back here with the people to build the temple. They started building the temple in 535. All right, that's when they began to build the temple. All right, and that was just a year after they got back. They got back in 536. Okay, so a year later they started building the temple. And then the people harassed them. And he talks about how they harassed them through the time of Darius. All right, and he mentions Darius, and it was during the time of Darius that Darius told them to go ahead and keep building the temple. And so they began to work on the temple again, and they finished the temple in 515. All right? In 515 it was finished. All right? So that was under the time of Darius, that when they actually finished the temple. And it was before this, just at the beginning of Darius' reign here, when Haggai and Zechariah were preaching. Okay, so Haggai and Zechariah were preaching, told them to get going. And that's what happened. But when you read this section here in verse 6, and I won't take the time to read it now. You can read it. It's fairly lengthy. But in this section, from verse 6 to verse 23, it talks, I'll just read a little bit of it to get you started. Verse 6, it says, and in the reign, all right, let's read in verse 5. And they hired counsels against them to frustrate the purpose of all the days of Cyrus. Okay, all the days of Cyrus. And even until the reign of Darius, okay? From Cyrus till Darius. So those are the first kings, and Cambyses is just kind of ignored because he wasn't king very long. All right? And in the reign of Ahasuerus. Oh, now that's way down here. All right? This is Ahasuerus. And the king of Persia. And the writings of the letters was written. Oh, sorry. Ahasuerus. Where was I? I lost some thought. All right, verse 6. In the beginning of his reign, he wrote unto him accusations against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. And in the days of Artaxerxes, wrote these guys and talked to him, verse number 7. So now it's talking about Artaxerxes. Now, what's that got to do with building the temple? Well, technically nothing. But what Ezra is doing, if you look on the chart, when you download the chart, Ezra came back to Israel here. And Nehemiah came back a little bit later. All right, so there's Ezra and Nehemiah. They came back then. And so Ezra came back to do the in 458 for worship. And then Nehemiah came back in 445 for the temple, or for the walls, for the walls of Jerusalem. Okay? So that'll help you to understand. Now, why is he talking about stuff that happened way down here? What he's doing, he's using an illustration. He's talking about all the time that the people had harassed them. These Samaritans harassed them all during the time of Cyrus, all during the time of Camius and Darius. They kept on harassing them all during the time of Xerxes, and even on through Artaxerxes. They were harassing them still. And since Ezra came back here, he was writing from this point. This is when Ezra was writing. He was writing this history book. He was writing things that happened 80 years earlier. He was writing about the things that took place way back here. He wasn't actually back here with them. So he's writing about all this. So he's using these illustrations of how they picked on him there and there and there and there, and they're still picking on him here. All right? So verses 6 to 23 are illustrations of how they were still picking on him down here and harassing him down here, writing letters to the king, trying to get him to stop. And you see down in verse number 23, this kind of gives it away. And it says, and a copy of the king Artaxerxes' letter was read before Rehum and Shimshai, the scribe, and their companions. And they went up in haste to Jerusalem unto the Jews and made them cease by force. All right, that wasn't what I was looking for. It talks in one place about them stopping them from building the city. Verse 21. Thank you. All right, give me commandment and cause them the men to cease this city be not rebuilt, be not built until there's another commandment. All right, so he talked about building the city, not the temple. All right, so this is up here. They're talking about building the city. So evidently, when Ezra went back, they started building the city, starting to rebuild the city. And they came along and they made this decree, said, stop building the city. You can't do that. Because Ezra didn't have the permission to do that from the king. So they stopped him from building the city. But then Artaxerxes changed his mind by the time Nehemiah came. And that's probably why Nehemiah was kind of trembling. And we'll see that later on when we get into Nehemiah. He was kind of trembling when he came before the king. And the king says to him one day, how come you're sad, Nehemiah? And he goes, I can't be sad in the king's presence. He might take my head off. And he says, why shouldn't I be sad when my home city is destroyed? And he says, what do you want to do? He says, I'd like your permission to go back and build it. And he says, okay, go ahead. But see, they had harassed them all the way until here. So Ezra is using this as an illustration to strengthen and show you. He didn't give us any illustrations, but he did say that the people were hiring counselors against them. So it could be that way back here with Cyrus, they were hiring counselors and sending them to Cyrus and saying, Cyrus, these people are bad. They're causing trouble. They're doing bad things. And they told Darius and they caused trouble. And finally, the people, I believe during this time here, it doesn't appear that the king gave them any hard and fast decree, stop building the temple. They said, stop building the city. But it appears that there wasn't any direct command, but the people just, I've had enough of this. You know, this irritation, these things, these people are bugging us all the time. It's not worth it. Let's just go back home. Forget it. And they finally, before Darius took over, they had given up. They had quit building. They just kind of threw in the towel and said, it's too hard, it's too much pain, there's too much hassle. These people are against us, they're fighting us all the time. It's not worth it. Let's just forget it. And they stopped building the temple. And that's when Haggai and Zechariah come along and say, come on, guys, let's go. We can build it. God sent us here to build it. Let's get up and build. And the people got excited again. They got permission from Darius. And Darius said, go ahead. Cyrus said it was okay. I'll agree with that. Go ahead and rebuild the temple. And they got busy and built it. And in a few years, they had it done. And 515 was finished. But it took for a long time here that it sat there and nothing was really done because they got discouraged and they got downhearted. And so from this, these fabrications, these lies, the people discouraged the people and wore them down and hindered them. And you know, we need to be very careful that we don't get discouraged by the lies and the opposition and the opposition from the world. You know, the world is against Christianity. In many places, Christian schools are outlawed. You can't have Christian schools. There's places where biblical discipline is frowned upon and even judged against. If you want to train your children biblically, they say, you can't do that. Well, and now, you know, we're up against this thing with this new marriage thing. And, you know, Lord willing, it won't pass. But if it does, again, we'll have another strike against us and trying to work against it. So there's these things, you know, sometimes there's going to be some Christians say, oh, it's just not worth it. Forget it. Let's just go. If you can't beat them, join them. Well, no, don't do that. Stand strong. And that's why this whole section, this whole chapter here is here for us to remind us to hold the fort. Hold the fort. Don't give up. Don't surrender. Don't give in. Stand strong for the Lord. Stand strong for your convictions. Stand strong for the Bible. Don't get soft. Don't give in. Just stand true for God no matter what happens. And as Christians, we need to be faithful to the Lord and know what we believe and stand for what we believe and not budge for what we believe and be faithful to the Lord. And so when the devil comes, and he will come with all these enemies to attack us. He will attack us with the infiltration and try to get people inside to try to discourage you, your family members and your relatives and your friends and the people at work. And they're going to say things that are going to try to discourage you. Then there's going to be the irritation when people are throwing things towards you to try to discourage you and say things about you and irritate you and frustrate you and make you feel bad and mock you and make you feel like quitting and all these irritations and interruptions. And then there's going to be the fabrications, the lies that people say. And they say bad things about us. We need to stand strong. You know, we need to be true and faithful to God and not budge, because the world is against us. The devil's against us. And we know that. And so we know what's coming. And that's exactly what happened here with these people. They're trying to build the temple. They get discouraged. They get downhearted. And they finally, it slows the work down to a creep and a crawl. And they finally quit. They just say, it's not worth it. Let's go back home. And they let us sit there for a long time. Until along came Haggai and Zechariah. Just because, come on, let's go. And so we need to keep this in mind. It'll be a help to us, an encouragement to us, that the devil is against us. When he attacks us with infiltration, don't compromise. When he attacks us with irritation, determined to do right till the stars fall. And when he attacks us with the fabrication and lies, we need to hold the fort, don't quit, press on, and stand for what's right. And, you know, the devil will use the most tender attacks that he can find in our lives. You know, it may be a close friend. It may be somebody that you really like. Someone that is close to you. And they start picking on you or pushing you or trying to twist you and get you to bend and not be. Those are the ones that are hard. It's not easy to stand up. It's not easy to stand up when people you love are against you. And that's what the devil often uses. We need to be very careful, because the devil delights in doing that. And we need to stand strong, don't budge, walk with the Lord, and do what's right.